Welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Glauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Hack and Slash and Massive Chalice, two newer games from Double Fine.
This is our Double Fine.
Dub Dubs.
Episode. Dub Dub Dub. Dub 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 Wang. Dub Worm in the house. Yeah, talking about this. Double Fine does these. They put out a lot of, they do these Amnesia Fortnite
right
things, and so they get a lot of game ideas, and it feels like they've been super active ever since the Broken Age Kickstarter.
Yeah.
They put out a lot of stuff. So it's good to, have you played Broken Age? I have not played Broken Age.
I did. I played the first section that's out of it.
I was waiting for the whole thing to come out. Yeah, but it was time to kind of revisit our good friends Double Fine.
Yes.
See what those guys are up to. So Nick, tell me about Hack and Slash.
Sure. So Hack and Slash is a kind of action adventure Zelda clone wannabe, where the main mechanic is that you have kind of access to the underlying code of the game, so you can kind of hack your way through things in order to solve puzzles or to just kind of make the game bend to your will, and thus you're not kind of facing the game as much as seeing how the best ways in which to tweak the game in order to make things super easy on you.
Yeah, it's in a long line of games that work from the title backwards.
Yeah,
like that's a double meaning. What can we do with that? And it is so essentially you get this sword, this USB sword that you can plug into certain items in the environment, not everything, and then change parameters
right
of them. This is something that so again, it's made of that game jam environment, right? So like,
yeah,
they do this thing where it's like everybody comes up with game ideas and then people vote on the ones they'd most like to play, and you can really see how cool it sounds on paper.
Exactly.
But it's a bad game. It is in beta now.
I was looking, actually. I don't think they've done an update for it in forever. So.
Yeah, it's on the Wikipedia. It says that it's all the way out, but it's like it is technically it's a full release. But I thought I saw something that was like they're still working on it, but they might have just given up.
Yeah,
like might be that they might just be done with it. Like, oh, we did this proof of concept. Let's move on.
It was born out of the same Amnesia Fortnite that Space-based DF9 was. They put out prototypes of both of them, and then those two games specifically went on to become quote unquote full releases. But I think that was when these games were the ones that they were working on when they did their cutbacks.
Yeah.
And got rid of a bunch of people. So I know for a fact DF9 is no longer in development, despite definitely not being done. And I'm pretty sure that's the case of this one as well.
And there's a whole grand discussion to be had there. And we talked a little bit about Double Fine's kind of policies as far as that. And then the idea of like, there's a little bit of a bait and switch involved with people who bought this at early access. And then there aren't really that many changes between mm-hmm. the early access and the full release. But the thing with this game is that it's not, the reason why I think this is a bad game is not that it's not done necessarily.
Right.
I think they're just, it is a concept that doesn't, that sounds way more interesting than it actually is.
Right.
And that's like putting aside like all of the other like kind of aesthetics and control problems and kind of game feel problems that it has.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is an ugly game that feels bad. Like it's kinesthetically really off. There's no sense of movement to your character. Like it feels like a bad Flash game. There are lots of pits and it is really, really hard to tell when you are about to fall into a pit.
Yeah.
The background has no sense of contrast, so you can't tell what is a pit in the background and what isn't.
The camera placement's bad. I really hate the collision detection when moving around in this. You just get stuck on corners constantly.
Yep. And your sword for being an offensive item, because even though you're supposed to be subverting this thing where you're not actually hurting things, in effect, you really are. Like, you are just hitting things with a sword.
Right.
Just because the end effect is not doing damage, it's this reprogramming thing. So you still need to hit something with your sword, which is incredibly short. And because of your character model and the way that the collision detection works, like, you're going to take a lot of cheap damage.
Yeah.
And the way they balance this is by having these health refill bushes everywhere. But it's just time consuming and tedious to, you know, you're going to get hit, you know, you're going to get refilled on health. The UI has no, there's no indicator as to where you're supposed to be going or what you're supposed to be doing in the game at all. Like, you get items and you don't know what they do. There, you have nothing, no goal, which, like, I didn't, like, I thought I would like that. Like, you know, that's something like the lack of guidance is something that we, you know, praise games like Dark Souls for. But Dark Souls gives you a hint of, like, an evocative goal.
Right.
And then, but this gives you really nothing. You're just kind of plopped down in this world. And, you know, it feels really lazy.
I mean, so, like, the base idea of, like, a game where you're, the entire plot of the game is to fuck up the game. Like, you get access to all the flags and all the variables in the game, and you can just twist those to your whim, and then trying to build puzzles around that could be something that would be amazing. Like, I kind of wish there's, like, I want them to take this concept into a sequel for Transistor.
I wonder, see, I think I that was my first thought, but then I wonder if this is them trying to do that, and it's not a concept that supports a game very well. Like, this is them trying to do that, and this is the end result. Because, like, you know, if you make literally everything programmable and you can just make, you know, a barrier movable or a barrier intangible or something like that, then you can't block the player. Like, giving that player that much control is fundamentally opposed to the idea of having puzzles or having obstacles. The way that this game addresses it is by making the gimmick only apply to a really small subset of assets in the game, which kind of defeats the point. Like, I feel like that having that total control might be antithetical to the way that, you know, challenge is done in games.
Right.
You know, like, the closest thing to what you're talking about that I think works is something like Scribblenauts.
Yeah.
You know, where, like they give you a very broad brush in that, but they don't literally let you just make the thing disappear. This is like a step of godhood above Scribblenauts, and that might be a step too far, because Scribblenauts is already balls easy. Like, it's, you know, you don't play that game because it's, there's anything to it. But if they took this to its natural conclusion as a mechanic, I think that it might be, it wouldn't be a game anymore.
I actually really like a lot of games that the puzzles are kind of programmatically based, like Space Chem, and hopefully soon we'll do an episode on Infinite Factory. Like, these are games where the puzzling itself is working out how to make all the different kind of cogs in a machine work, and tweaking those to get the best, you know, performance or what have you out of it. The problem with this game is the puzzles aren't program puzzles. The puzzles are game puzzles that you can break in programming, and then there's no puzzle.
Yeah, this isn't that. And I don't think that the what you're talking about would work in, like, a Zelda, you know, an action adventure. Like, what this comes down to is Sokoban. Like, it becomes down to block pushing puzzles where, yes, you can change a bunch of attributes of how the blocks are pushed, but the actual game is just figuring out how to push the blocks.
Yeah, it's still a game puzzle and not a program puzzle.
Yes, there's no, at least in the first half of it, I've read a little bit, I got mad at it and stopped playing.
Agreed.
Yeah. I read about the kind of back half of it, and I guess it goes way too far in the other direction where you're literally doing code.
Yeah.
But I guess that there's not a ramp up for it. Like, I guess it apparently just kind of comes out of nowhere is what I've read.
Right.
And is too hard and not gamey enough.
Yeah, instead of it, like, being, it switches halfway through from being game puzzles that either the mechanics don't even really do anything to help you with, or otherwise you get to just, like, completely break them with your mechanics, to being these ultra hard programmy, or, like, ultra confusing, super deep into, like, literally I'm just reprogramming the game. I'm not restricted in my ability to do anything. It's just me trying to figure out how the fuck the code works.
Right.
And those are two different audiences that, like, the audience that's me who likes programming puzzles isn't gonna like the first part half enough to get to the second half, and the, like, more casual gamers who just wanted a more traditional puzzle-y game are gonna like the first half isn't strong enough to be good, and the second half is too difficult and too obscure to be interesting.
Yeah, even if they got past the obvious problems with the first half, they would hit a wall with the second half.
Exactly.
And it's this game, like, purported to, like, you know, the guy who made it like quoted something about this game helping teach you how to hack.
No.
Like, and that's not what it is. Like, it is.
It doesn't teach you like anything. It doesn't teach you how to play the game.
It teaches the only thing. Yeah, exactly. Like the only thing it teaches you, and if this is if you have a real shallow understanding of games, is that like when you push a block in a game, there are variables attached to it, and these are the variables. Like at the most, it could be is this idea that like there's slightly more to these things you take for granted than you maybe think. And that's like a worthwhile lesson, but this doesn't teach that very well. And you really kind of have to dig for that.
Yeah. I still think that the concept itself isn't actually a bad concept. This is just a real, real bad execution.
Yeah. I would be curious as to I could see the concept working almost as a fun way to teach people to make games, almost as like a level editor.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had this little guy that you moved around the space and you were literally just reprogramming the environment to edit levels as a way to teach you about these things, that kind of works to me, but not so much as a game.
Right.
For at least in my mind, like I was really disappointed with this and I was not expecting it to be quite as hard on the eyes and ears as it is.
God, yeah, it's harsh.
It's
the worst.
Really ugly. It looks like Aaron Insurance.
Yeah,
the guys on the TriMet ads.
This is by far like the worst art direction that Double Fine has ever had. Like Double Fine typically has pretty good like twee cutesy art that works,
and writing too. Like it's not that clever or funny either. Like that's a thing that like this is what you got, Double Fine. Like, don't throw that away, please. Like you guys do aesthetically pleasing, well-written games that usually aren't that great, and this is none of the above. Like it is impossible to recommend this. Like
it is
one of the worst games we played for the show.
The only people I recommend this to is someone who thinks that concept is cool, wants to see it the worst execution, and then can come back and create
and
something
do
way
better.
Cooler.
Yeah, and it's so sad that this isn't, you know, that this is their done version that they put out. Like. I have so much goodwill for those guys, but they keep undercutting it in a way that bums me out. Like I want them to succeed. I like that. I want this mid-range company. You know, like they're an indie developer kind of, but they're pretty big.
Right.
In that world, I like that. I like that this middle class
right.
that exists, and it just like I don't know, man. Like this needed more time in the oven.
Definitely.
Like, so blah.
Blah. All right. Okay, so let's move on to Massive Chalice.
Slightly greener pastures.
Yeah, slightly greener pastures. So Massive Chalice, it's a like turn-based strategy RPG that was actually kickstarted, I believe, and now is out in a sort of early access release as of November.
Yeah, and as far as we know, this is still being updated.
Yeah, this one is still being developed. It had its own Kickstarter and is due to be fully released. So Gary, what do you like about Massive Chalice?
Massive Chalice is really interesting. Like there are some kind of like minor nitpicks I have with it, but it is a really neat mix of kind of a like a bigger strategy game and a tactics game. Kind of mixed together. So like you have this this zoomed in view, this tactical combat, like your Final Fantasy Tactics or your XCOMs or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between you are claiming territories and creating lineages and doing some kind of like minor base building stuff, like doing research, kind of doing tech trees and everything.
Right.
That inform the smaller battles.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty neat mashup of two genres I like. And it does have a really kind of evocative world. Like the art style is not my favorite thing. It's not bad. It's no hack and slash, but like everything looks cool. But the kind of idea of this, like this massive chalice, as this kind of weird omniscient God artifact
right.
thing, which is really cool. Like that, you know, the optical illusion where there are two faces, facing each other in a vase, that there are two different voices.
Yeah.
In this, that are kind of this creature that has controlled you and you are the player in this as this kind of like omnipotent thing. It's like really neat.
Yeah.
There's kind of a lot to that I think is cool. And it's a genre I like anyway. Like I like tactics games a lot.
Right.
And this is a pretty decent one. Again, there are some minor mechanical things, but the fact that it is still in alpha or beta or early access or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. Gives me hope that some of that stuff will be tweaked.
Right.
But it's got a really interesting premise and plays pretty well so far.
Yeah, I like the like lineage time scale that the game operates on. Like, you only have a fight every, like, almost every generation of people in your nation, and so a lot of the game is actually trying to kind of train and raise new offspring based on like creating keeps and setting who the lord eugenics. And lady of that keep are. Yeah, it's definitely eugenics the game. Yeah. But to kind of every fighter you have, and there's like three different roles that they can have, but they all have their own kind of strengths and weaknesses, and you breed them, like you arrange marriages to create children that'll kind of have the best mix of traits, and that's pretty cool. And then those offspring will then become your next fighters who you can then continue the cycle with.
There's tons of like risk reward, because if you consign someone to being a monarch, they can no longer fight. If you consign someone to being a researcher or something like that, they can no longer fight. Mm-hmm. And they only level up through fighting. So you're giving up, you know, one of your frontline fighters at the hopes of getting better frontline fighters in the next generation.
Right.
Which is a really cool kind of mechanic. And the fact that like you only have these battles every once in a while, like you're fighting off this blight kind of thing that wells up, and it gives it a real different kind of feel. You know, the idea of this, like, this people dealing with this thing as opposed to a war.
Right.
You know, like, this is just a fact of life for these people. And it's dealing with time on a scale that you don't see in games often at all.
Crusader Kings is the one thing that comes to mind where you actually, like, deal with this kind of lineage time scale. And this kind of, I think, probably takes a lot from that series. That series is ridiculously deep and huge and complex in a way that I could never wrap my head around, but this kind of takes those cool key ideas of like this huge time scale and this your offspring being the next people to kind of hold the banner and all that is something they kind of stripped out of that Crusader Kings deep strategy style game and brought into this much lighter tactical RPG, which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is like the tactical RPG stuff is no great shakes as far as where I've played so far.
Yeah, I agree.
Like there are a lot, you could be a lot deeper than that. Like the fact that you only really have three classes, mm-hmm. and you can research kind of armaments and loadouts for them, but it's no Final Fantasy Tactics. Like you're not getting the kind of complex interplay of jobs that you get in a different game. This is closer to like a Jane Dark than it is a Final Fantasy Tactics in that respect.
Right.
But it's serviceable. And like, it is one of those things where the stuff that you're doing outside of it influences it and is interesting enough to where like, I'll probably keep playing it.
Right.
I want to see how those intersect, or at the very least, I will wait for this to get done mm-hmm. and then revisit it. Just because I want to see them do that. And I want to see them fix some of the kind of minor things in it, like the game is really slow.
Yeah.
like there's a lot of time between turns. There's no way to speed up the animations on things that I could find, so like you spend a lot of time just watching the camera swing around.
Yeah.
You know, and these kind of not that dramatic, and it's a small numbers game, which I like you know, your units have like 10 or 12 hit points, but on top of that is accuracy. Like you have this real like second edition D&D hit to miss ratio.
Yeah.
That can be a real bummer. Like it just makes you like, I understand it. I get it. And it's not like a hard game. Like I never died or got close to dying, but it would just take I'd miss a lot of hits.
Yeah.
Before I would, you know, like a lot of times, like, you know, your guys who are like your bombers have a 50% ratio, and it's not like there's a scatter or a bounce. It seems like I didn't see that there was one. So like if I missed with a grenade, it just whiffed.
Yeah.
Which like that's the point of grenades. It's close only counts. Like close is supposed to count, man. Like it's horseshoes or a hand grenade. Like close should count.
It does in a small area. Like if you're only off by one square, they still get hit by the AoE. But
okay, I maybe I was missing by more pretty yeah. consistently, but like it seemed like I wasn't able to, or there was a cover issue where like they would show up in the hurt box mm-hmm. for my grenade, but they were behind a piece of geometry, so like it totally blocked the shrapnel or what have you.
Right.
Something I was having some kind of disagreement with that, and even like your accuracy characters start out with 75% accuracy. Which, like, yes, they're supposed to be low-level characters, but the way the game, like, incentivizes retiring your high-level characters for the future, like, it just kind of makes for, like, an interesting power curve, but one that gets in the way of kind of satisfaction.
Yeah, a lot of your guys are going to die before the next battle.
Yeah.
Just because of the time scales. Like, the people die after they reach a certain age. So it's like, you're not going to get to level 10. You're probably not going to get to level 5. So,
right. And is it equipment? Is that like how that's where the curve is supposed to be, I think, the advancement curve?
I guess so. And I guess, you know, just breeding for people who are more accurate and more and whatnot.
Yeah, like a stronger stock.
Right. So, yeah, it definitely has some weakness to that. They play it into the story well because of what you're doing when you go to these fights. But I also don't like that the battles basically seem to be a lot of kind of search and destroy instead of, you can't like set up for anything. You have to go seek them out.
At the very least. And that's the opposite of what they say is happening. Like they say, like you, when you do battles, like they do this interesting thing where like, you're only going to be able to defend one of your places at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You choose between two battles and you get different rewards. And like, presumably there are consequences for losing some of them, but there are all these search and destroys, even though it's supposed to be these things on the border of your keep. You know, let me have a keep. Like, let me be in a defensible position. Let me have a yeah. keep. You know, and that's another thing that other tactics games do really well. Like, you play through Final Fantasy Tactics, which is the game I keep name-checking because it's out of all the games that are tactical games, it's the one I play the most, but I've played a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a wide variety of things. Like, you know, defend this person, defend this position for a certain number of turns.
Right.
You know, set up this ambush. Like, they can put you in different kinds of positions of power, and this game doesn't have that developed, at least in the early game. It's a big game, so it's not... I didn't quit this out of hatred like I did with Hack and Slash.
Right.
I just quit out of not having time to devote more time to it. But I probably, like I said, I probably will pick it up a little later because it does have potential, but I want them to up that variety. Because as is, it is just really, you know, you spot it. There's no way to do like ambushes.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like the enemies don't seem active.
Like, until you spot them. Yeah.
Until you spot them. Right. So they don't come to you. You can't play defensively. Like it is really just like, it's like you said, it's a search and destroy. And that's kind of a bummer. Like it's not very interesting.
Well, especially since two of the classes, their primary way of dealing damage is at a range. Like,
yeah,
it makes me want to just all have the melee guys and have them all roam in a pack around the map.
Yeah. Yeah, so, or all the snipers and then just have them peek around a corner.
Right.
And then just, but you can't set up like an ambush or anything. Like you can't do anything with it. So like, it does have a weird, it's that fucking Double Fine thing, man. Like it is a bunch of interesting ideas like put together, but it just needs like a lot of fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And this is the guy who made this, was also, I think the project lead on, he did, Iron Brigade, which mm-hmm. I haven't played yet, but he also did, Brutal Legend. Like he was the main guy for that. And he's
right.
like he's like the tactics guy
yeah.
at Double Fine. And like that's how I felt about that game too. Where like there are a lot of really interesting ideas that are kind of in conflict and it just needs a little bit more like massaging and tweaking.
Yeah. Brutal Legend is a terrible example of that though. Because like there was it felt like he kinda was able to have one page front and back of what the tactics game could be and like that's what they went with. So it's like you can't fully flesh this out, you only get one page front and back
yeah.
and tell us all the mechanics that's be in here and then that'll be the game.
Well, the crazy thing about Brutal Legend is that it's just like Sacrifice, which is a weird game that people have affection for that I don't understand. like it's just Sacrifice, but Sacrifice isn't, I don't think Sacrifice is a good game. I don't think like in the action strategy stuff like that really works.
No.
But like it that was a thing where like it just needed some tweaking. Like in that game, you know, I had a hard time controlling my guys getting them to go. They weren't quite smart enough on their own. You know, and this game, like I need a greater variety of play styles, or like scenario design rather.
Yeah.
And I would love a greater variety. And that's what they're actually introducing this. There's just been a patch where there are like hybrid classes, which like great, like double, oh, cool. You know, double the number of classes.
Perfect.
Like that's, you know, and in fact, triple it, you know, quadruple it. Like, give me some more stuff. And that's going to make this game like actually really good as opposed to like interesting and above average.
Yeah. Give me some enemies that are actually scanning for me that I can kind of set up for and fuck up, and like that'd be cool. I mean, I don't need a full like you know, cover an Overwatch system that is like everything in the new XCOM. Like you can't play that game without just setting up and making sure you're in a better spot and putting everyone on Overwatch. Like that is the way to play that game, and I don't want that. Like, find a happy medium and make it something that's not search and destroy, where all my people who can do stuff at a range are much less
at a disadvantage.
Yeah, so
yeah, it has that kind of Double Fine thing of like trying to take a genre and simplify it, you know, because we saw that with Costume Quest as well,
right,
where it's taking this thing, because as far as like a tactics game go, it's a very simple tactics game.
Right.
But it doesn't need to be. Like, I feel like there's so much trust placed in the player with the long form eugenics stuff,
mm-hmm.
and so little placed with the player in the on the ground stuff. And like at the end of the day, you're going to be spending most of your time on the ground.
Right.
You know, like the way they intersect is really interesting and cool, but just by percentage, the hours I'm going to spend in individual fights need to be strong.
Yeah.
Like that's your core mechanic. Everything else is great, but that's the main thing that I'm doing. Pay a lot of attention to that, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but worthwhile. I don't know if it's worthwhile at $30 right now.
Right.
You know, it's a little expensive. But the, it is worth checking out, and I'll be watching it.
Yeah. So. I think that, you know, at least this has a vein of potential that is missing from a lot of Double Fine stuff as of late. So,
yeah, agreed there. I was actually gifted this by iHawkGuy, or exclamation point HawkGuy on Steam. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
I think Hack and Slash actually was gifted to me from Brian Wade, I think.
Oh yeah,
so, Wade. Yeah. So. Thanks to both of you guys. We appreciate games to check out. So
yeah, thanks everybody for gifting anything, and don't feel bad if we didn't like them as much as you wanted us to. But it was still very much appreciated.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So
Gary, where can they find us?
If you go to facebook.com/comradepodcast,
no,
I believe. No, check it out. /checkitoutcomrade.
There you go.
And Comrade Podcast on Twitter.
That's the one.
Those are two places. If you have suggestions, you can go to duckfeed.tv/contact. If you want to, you can support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And we have kind of a fun slate of games ahead of us right now. Like a bunch of stuff came out.
Yeah, what the hell?
That we're excited. Yeah, it's really kind of crazy. But we're still always looking for suggestions. So send them our way. Just don't feel bad if we don't get to them until like June.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Yeah, take care.